So when I say, when I chant that, I also vow to listen to the truth of the Tathagata's words. It's not like I'm the Tathagata, right? It's just that there's some words that have been spoken by somebody we call the Tathagata. And we vow to listen to those words. Tathagata, I think many of you know, means thus come one or thus gone one. Tathata, thus or such. A word that's really at the heart of Zen practice. So we have this text called the Jewel Mirror Samadhi that I've been talking about this fall a few times. And that text says, it opens and says, the teaching of Tathata, the teaching of thusness, is intimately communicated by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it, so keep it well. So now we have this opportunity, this wonderful opportunity for 2.5 days to practice the teaching of Tathata, the teaching of thusness. So what is this teaching of thusness? If you look up the dictionary definition, it will say something. And you should do that. You should look it up, the dictionary definition. since I've been talking about this and thinking about the teaching of thusness quite a bit, you know, in reviewing the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, I've been, you know, that is one of the great benefits of being someone who's going to give a talk, right? You're going to study, and you're going to think about these things, and you're going to concentrate a little more than usual on these teachings. So I've been doing that, and part of that doing has been noticing how I meet things, how I meet each thing. So like when this morning, when I was driving over here and contemplating all that we have to do to make this event happen and the many events that are going to go on, like meals and teaching you how to do the meals and unrolling this whole event. At that time, maybe I was a little worried or something, a little nervous. But also at that time, I noticed exactly what the steering wheel on the car felt like. I noticed it had some little texture to it. And I noticed how my hands were meeting that and how they were feeling that. And this is part of the teaching of thusness. This is actually the core of the teaching of thusness, to meet what's coming to our touch, to meet what's coming to our eyes, to meet what's coming to our ears. This inconceivable meeting of self and other, of subject and object, of, as we like to say, of Buddhas and sentient beings. So we are going to have an opportunity, if we're lucky, to have those kinds of meetings. Actually, not if we're lucky. We're going to have those kinds of meetings all throughout our session. And, of course, we always are having those kind of meetings. We're constantly having those meetings. And we get to see how it is. We get to see if we can, especially in Sesshin, if we can really bring ourselves to those meetings and bring ourselves in a curious way, in an open way, with some real sense of inquiry about what is this? How does this work, that there's a voice and I hear it and I think thoughts about it and I have feelings about it? So over and over again, we're having these kinds of meetings. And as we know, sometimes we have like a whole day can go by, and we might look back in that day and you might think, I really wasn't there for a lot of that day. I really wasn't down for a lot of what happened today. And I didn't really meet it. So this is a special time. This is a special time for us to make a vow, form an intention, to really meet each thing. And as we know from our study, particularly the second skanda, form, feelings, right? Feelings or sensation. Vedana in the original language of the sutras. We know from our study of a sensation that there can be three kinds. There can be pleasant, there can be unpleasant, and there can be neutral. Undoubtedly, in our 2.5 days together, we're going to have some unpleasant meetings. Some unpleasant meetings with our body, potentially, sitting in this posture, in this upright posture. I actually, for myself, I'm quite sure I'm going to have some unpleasant meetings with my back, because I invariably do have unpleasant meetings with my back in Sesshin, in any long retreat. What an opportunity, though, to really take care of my back, to really pay attention to the pain and just what minor adjustments, what subtle adjustments I could make to be as gentle as possible with myself while still maintaining my great desire, my great intention, my great love for sitting upright. I really want to sit upright. I really want to be fully here for what's coming. And in the midst of that, there's probably going to be some pain. So I have to take care of that. Now we have it, so please take care of it. We have a body. So let's really commit ourselves to taking care of this body while we're sitting throughout our sesshin. And we're going to be doing some meal practice, and this meal practice is going to be a little awkward because we're doing it at tables, sitting at a table. I don't think I've ever done orioki sitting at a table. Probably most people haven't. And anyway, this table, I've done orioki sitting at a table, but the table should be quite low for doing orioki, and our tables aren't quite low. They're rather high compared to the chairs. Short people, I highly recommend, get some kind of cushion so you can be up higher than this table, because it's going to be even more difficult for a shorter person. So get something under your butt to raise you up for doing this meal practice. Otherwise, meal practice will be an unpleasant event. So anyway, we can have three kinds of sensation during our practice. We can also have some pleasant sensation. According to the teaching of thusness, we're not to get carried away with pleasant sensation. We're not to get overly attracted, the moon about pleasant sensation. So we just meet. If there's pleasant sensation, if there's some wonderful feeling that comes, just meet. Wonderful feeling that comes. That will be just right. And then at times, it may just be neutral. We're just doing zazen. We're watching thoughts come and go. We're watching feelings come and go. And we're just doing our practice. It's a rather neutral event. Just watching things come and watching things go. About this teaching, Maizumi Roshi says, the intimacy, remember he says, the teaching is intimately communicated. Maizumi Roshi says, the intimacy is simply realizing that your true nature and the phenomenal world are meeting right here, now, as your life. Our meeting right here now is your life. Don't take this for granted. About this teaching, Hakuin said, it's like two mirrors mutually reflecting one another without even the shadow of an image between. Mind and objects are one and the same. Things and oneself are not two. So this is the inconceivable teaching of the non-difference of self and others, the non-difference of subject and objects, the meeting. Later in the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, there's a line that says, Yi, a fellow named Yi, a Chinese fellow named Yi, Yi, with his archer's skill, could hit a target at 100 paces. But when arrow points meet head on, what has this to do with the power of skill? It's from a story about two archers who had a competition, the student and the teacher. Apparently, the student actually wanted to kill the teacher because he wanted to show that he was the best and he wanted to be the best in the land. So they fired an arrow at each other, but they were so accurate that arrow points met head on and fell harmlessly to the ground. And the student, of course, had a great awakening. You know, based on our experience, we know it won't always be like this. You know, it won't always be perfect. It won't always be inconceivably perfect. So, you know, at some point in this event, we're keeping silence for this event, but we have to interact. We'll have to interact to do various things. And we'll have to speak to each other to do various things. And at some point in the interaction, someone may say something that strikes you as not kind or not considerate, and you may feel like hurt by something somebody says. And yet we're in this situation where we can't talk about that. We can't say, hey, wait a minute, what did you mean? I didn't like your tone of voice at that moment. Actually, let's not do that. Let's actually, for this time, for 2.5 days, if we have some feeling of hurt or if we feel taken aback, this is a time, we might want to talk, maybe something will happen and we do want to talk to somebody after Sesshin. That would be fine. But during Sesshin, just make an effort to soothe whatever comes in yourself. Make an effort to soothe your own heart, your own precious heart. That's the kind of practice we do. Once I was in a sesshin and somebody said something very harsh to me. And, I was quite hurt. I was serving a meal and this person said something quite harsh to me. I don't remember what it was, but it was, you know, very dismissive and so forth. Maybe I asked him a question and it was like very dismissive. Like, we always do it this way. Forget you, you know. And I felt quite hurt. But, you know, it's sesshin. So I didn't say anything. I just thought, oh, I don't know what I thought, but I know I felt hurt. I felt dismissed, like I had been dismissed as not knowing enough or something like that. So I didn't say anything to this person. And then at the end of the sesshin, This person came up to me and said, I said something to you very harsh during our sesshin when we were serving together, and I really feel badly about it. I apologize. Oh, I said, thank you. I appreciate that. I noticed that that was quite harsh. I appreciate you telling me so. But I never, like, I didn't have to react, in other words. I didn't have to react to what he had said because of the container of sesshin. So that's the way we can try practicing here together. Michael, what does the schedule say for the length of this lecture? 11. Okay. Okay, thanks. So I think I've talked about that. Oh, so I did want to mention one of the more difficult lines, and again, having the opportunity to think about this, we're going to chant the Jewel Mirror Samadhi at noon service. So we'll get a little bit of chance to go over some of these lines in our chant. So there's a line that immediately follows the first one that I announced. The teaching of thusness is intimately communicated by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have to keep it well. And then it says, hiding a heron in the moonlight, filling a silver bowl with snow. Taken as similar, they're not the same. When you mix them, you know where they are. It's always been a very confusing line for me. Very obviously, we're talking, we have to make allowances in the Jewel Mirror Samadhi for the fact that it was written over 1,000 years ago, right? So, and in a different culture. We're not used to images like this, hiding a heron in the moonlight, filling a silver bowl with snow. These aren't things of everyday discourse in our culture. So we have to understand that it's poetry for one thing. This in the original, all these every line in the Jewel Mirror Samadhi rhymes in the original. Every line, in fact, every line, apparently, from something I read, ends on the same tone, the same syllable. So it has a very constant rhyme scheme, very constant. The commentators, anyway, it's good to have a commentator about some of these things. The commentators tell us that this line, hiding a heron in the moonlight, filling a silver bowl with snow, heron and the snow are meant to represent, you know, phenomenal things of this world. A moonlight, and in this case, the bowl, a silver bowl, are meant to represent the noumenal, or the spiritual. We know, or common understanding is, the phenomenal and the noumenal are not the same. So you've got a white heron. Let's say you've got a white heron, and you've got moonlight. And they kind of, you can't quite see the boundaries of these two things. And in a silver bowl, snow the boundaries of the snow and the silver bowl will be indistinct. So I think for me, the most important part of this little couplet is the line, the ending part where it says, when you mix them, when you mix the heron and the moonlight and the silver bowl and the snow, when you mix them, you know where they are. And what I would suggest is that Zazen is a venue, place, is a nice mixing bowl. It's a very nice mixing bowl. And Zazen is a place where you can allow the phenomenal and the noumenal to mix. You can allow everyday thoughts, for instance, to burst into flames, if you will. In other words, there's nothing that can come up in Zazen that can't be turned, that can't be mixed, that can't be mixed and made into an object of practice, an object of enlightenment. We have this mixing bowl of Zazen. And so we'll be sitting a lot of Zazen for the next couple of days. And to sit Zazen and allow this mixing of everyday thoughts with awareness of the breath, with awareness of our posture, with an attitude of meeting what's coming, what's arising, just so, to meet it just so. This is to practice the teaching of thusness, to practice the essential teaching. It's really a rare opportunity.